Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Actually, John Hines in for Shaletta on this Saturday afternoon. I'll be here until 3 o'clock, as a matter of fact. A number of good guests coming up. Folks I'm looking forward to chatting with. And right off the get-go here at 12:08 on this Saturday, a friend, an old friend. We used to work together at WCCO in the evening. And he's so much more. If you follow him on Facebook, you'll see that he is always busy, always working on one thing or another. And now he's got a brand new book. I'm talking about none other than T.D. Mischke. Tommy Mischke joins me this afternoon here on WCCO to talk about just winter's song, a hymn to the North. Tommy, good afternoon. How the heck are you?
I am doing well. I am so delighted to be back on the air with you. It's been too long.
When I was working in the evenings and Tommy Mischke would come in and follow me on WCCO, I used to always say, don't say anything until I get to my car. So then I would scamper across the street to the parking ramp. And there was more than one occasion where I had to pull over because I was laughing uncontrollably or just, no, seriously, Tommy, that's the case. So we're going to find out what you've been doing besides this book, but let's talk about Winter's Song, A Hymn to the North. Give me the background behind the book. Where did the idea come from to put this together?
When I was interviewing people for a living at KSTP and then at WCCO, and I would be speaking with an author, I wanted to know how long it took them to write the book. And when they would say 2, 3, 4, 5, sometimes 6 years, I would say to myself, I wonder what I could spend that much time with. What is there out there that I could live with day in and day out, month after month, year after year? And I assumed there was nothing. And then one day it hit me. It was a winter day, and I realized, look at this gigantic thing before us, this thing called winter, this thing that's been a part of our lives here in the Northland forever, this thing that dominates the calendar, this thing that shapes, molds, and informs our personality. When I travel the country and tell people where I'm from, the first thing they talk about is our winters. It's our identity. But I couldn't find another book that had addressed that. Mostly what I found was a lot of winter survival books, how I made it in the Arctic the whole year. But nothing about day-to-day life of just living in this part of the country with this crazy season, which I argue has nothing to do with the others. Spring, fall, and summer are variations on a theme. Winter is another planet.
Well, having lived through so many winters in the North, I would have to agree. You know, I talk to a lot of people, Tommy, who say that, you know, oh, yeah, I live in the North. But they might be the Northeast. It might be New York or, you know, Philadelphia. They don't know North. And if you look at a map of the 48 states, the lower 48 of the United States of America, the northernmost reach is that of Minnesota, right? I mean, it might not curve only, and yeah, yeah.
Not only that, John, not only are we the northernmost state, but the majority of Canadian citizens live south of northern Minnesota. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. The majority of people in the Great White North live below northern Minnesota. I don't even battle with Canadians on this. I don't think they have much more to say. I think we are a populated area in a very, very cold part of the world, and at least in the United States, there aren't too many really populated areas that are colder. But I call the North, which is what this book is a hymn to, I call the North the northern states of the United States in from the two coasts. So say you pick it up about eastern Montana and you ride it going east till northern Michigan. As you move beyond those points, west or east, things soften a bit due to those oceans. So that's the North I'm talking about. I'm not specifically saying Minnesota, but there is a region of this country that knows hard winter, and those people speak a different language than the other parts of the country.
Yeah, I want to ask you to do me a favor, if you will. I have been enjoying reading Winter's Song, A Hymn to the North. I truly have just enjoyed from the very beginning. Can I ask you to share a passage or two, something that from your pen to your mind to or vice versa, and share it with us on the air here, just to give me a bit of a reading from the author?
Sure, I'll choose where I start the book because that's about where we are right now. The book starts right after Halloween because that's when I first pick up the sense of winter coming. And I start the book after the introduction with, "It looms. I can't see it yet, but in that first week of November, it looms. I sense it marching toward me like an old relative on a lumbering trek from a distant town, some brooding uncle who will dominate a table gathering without uttering a word, just by the weight of his presence. Each year I anticipate our impending visitor, and each year I feel that familiar rush of sensations, nostalgia, wistfulness, wonder, resignation, and old joy. They all roll through me, and I instinctively make the necessary internal adjustments. Some northerners start to prepare psychologically when that first cool autumn wind blows in September. They're already grieving summer's end and lamenting all that awaits. Not me. Summer in the North passes like a languid dream, and I heartily welcome the glorious autumn with its explosion of color and its short but clarion song. It's only after Halloween that I pick up the vibrational shift and take note of that familiar relative on the horizon beginning that steely march." Now that's how I open.
When you say the vibration As I was reading that myself, I could just sense that. Yes, there is sort of a hum or a vibration that comes with the coming winter. Your reference to the preparations that we all made for winter, oh, mother of goodness, growing up in a house where we had to hang storm windows, was that your house too, Tommy?
Absolutely, and delightfully, I still see it. It's not gone away. My next door neighbor does it every year, and I watch him with delight. I'm usually in a lawn chair with a cigar, but I love watching them do it, celebrating that old school approach to getting ready for winter. I love all the things associated with getting ready for winter. There's these traditions, and they're little badges that we all wear as we move through them. Our winter badges as we prepare for that crazy season, that wild season that is unlike anything anybody else experiences in this country.
You know, let me ask you this: what do you think? If you can reach back in your mind, what is the coldest air temperature that you think you have sustained?
There was that 61 below in Embarrass, I think it was. Embarrass, Minnesota,
yes.
So that particular, when that hit there, I was in Collegeville, Minnesota. And so you probably got to bring it down to, I think we hit 35 below there, with wind chills at whatever. But I don't know that I haven't done the Ely thing. A lot of this book, or I shouldn't say a lot of it, there's a chapter where I talk to folks up in Ely, and commonly winter camping out on the ice at 40 below, not unusual at all. I'm not in that camp, pardon the pun. I'm intrigued by their stories. My favorite stories from these guys were they're on the ice, it's the middle of the night, and the moans and the pings and the cries and the strange sounds of the ice shifting, echoing, like echoing in a canyon under them and over them, and just this eerie sense that they create of what it's like to sleep on a frozen lake. Beautiful.
The number of times, now you are, again, striking familiar chords for me, for anybody who spent any length of time in the Great White North here and in Minnesota especially. But I likened that pinging, that moaning of the ice to like whale songs in winter. Yeah, as the ice would move against itself. And I'm still amazed by the people who are amazed that we would drive out onto the ice. And
You remind me of something there. I'm sorry, but you remind me of the people I interviewed who moved to Minnesota as adults from a tropical area, and the reports they had of staring at a frozen lake and people walking on a frozen lake, sending photos back home to people who could not believe the courage, the extraordinary courage of Minnesotans that they would even consider such a thing. No tight wire walk was ever so daring. And then one woman talks about, I think she immigrated from Asia, she talks about her husband, who was a Minnesotan, taking her out on the ice in a truck and spinning around, and she thought, well, now I am going to die. This is where I die. We're now driving on this thing. But she reported both wanting to get off the lake and also wanting to stay on the frozen lake because it was like the scariest, wondrous thrill ride she had ever been on at the fair. It was terrifying but exhilarating at the same time, and her description of it is just so wonderful.
In your description of that, I was just going to reference that. It was just, I can see that, I can sense that sort of apprehension or outright fear that someone might have. Chatting with Tommy Mischke, T.D. Mischke, who has authored Winter's Song, A Hymn to the North, and we're going to talk some more about that, and I'm going to we'll discuss fire when we continue, because that, to me, was one of the parts of the book that just jumped out. We'll be right back here. News Talk 830, WCCO.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Dr. Pepper, and Polar Seltzer, selected varieties and sizes, buy two and get three free of equal or lesser value, plus CRV. Limit three free items. USDA Choice Bone-In Ribeye Steak, $7.97 per pound. Limit two packages. Creamy Hass Avocados, 77 cents each. Limit four items. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season two on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season one and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season two. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Winter's Song, a hymn to the North, a book from T.D. Mischke. Just came out, by the way. Great cover photo. I want to come back to that in just a moment, Tommy. Tommy Mischke, my guest here this afternoon on News Talk 830 WCCO. There is a chapter that you write, a section of the book called Fire. And there's a line that says, a burning fire can hold one's attention for hours. And it's one of these things, if you have ever sat, if you've spent a cold night in Minnesota and looking into a fire, whether a fire pit in the backyard or that fireplace in the living room, that will eventually suck all the heat out of the house if you don't have those glass doors. Do you remember that? It's just like, absolutely. Oh, we can't have a fire because it'll suck all the heat out of the house when the fire goes out at night. But, you know, it is one of those things. I am a person who, if I don't have access to a fireplace, I will pull up the Yule log at Christmas and pull it up on a big screen TV and watch it. It's what you say about holding one's attention is spot on. It could not be more correct.
I make the comparison in the book to something Herman Melville said in Moby Dick. He talked about how all over the world people are drawn to water, and that you will see this time and time again where people arrive at a lake shore or an ocean shore or a pond and just stare. They just stare at it. And he tried to understand, what is that? Why are we just staring at that thing? What is the power of it? And I make the point in the book that Melville was not a citizen of an area that had hard winters. He didn't know hard winters. And I argue that when you arrive in the North during a winter, you can pull water from that picture and put fire in its place. Fire in the winter is what holds one's attention. Fire becomes the meditative focal point. Any Minnesotan will talk about the pull of water in the summer, spring, and fall, but it loses something when it's frozen. You don't stare at it as meditatively. Now your eyes move to the flame, and the flame in winter in the North is one of the most powerful things you can look at in every way. It's color, it's movement, the smell of the wood, the sound. With the winter waiting outside those windows, I just thought fire deserved its own chapter.
You know, but there is a line in there, and this is where that caught my attention right away. you know, having lived my life in Minnesota, where you say, in fact, there's probably not a natural feature in a northern winter that's ever been given the same degree of concentrated focus. I would argue, and I don't mean to argue with you, Tommy, but the number of times that I have sat out on the shore of a northern lake frozen with no fire in sight, but the northern lights, that's probably the northern lights are something that I can watch that can be equally as mesmerizing for me as the flames of a fireplace or a fire pit.
Oh, I can't agree with you more. It's just not as common to be able to have that experience. I would argue if you could have a mesmerizing northern lights display as often as you can sit in front of a fire, well, yeah, that would usurp the flames. The northern lights are something just, I mean, literally otherworldly. So I agree with you. The fire is just something you can create. And I don't just mean in the fireplace or the backyard fire pit, a candle. There are people I interview in the book. There's a whole chapter called Winter's Disciples, and it's about people who prefer winter. Winter is their season. They start to get down when spring comes. There are people like this. They were born for the winter. That is when they thrive. That's when they come alive. That's when they have all their energy. And they talk about all these different things they do, many of which have nothing to do with going out and enjoying it. It has to do more with what the season does to them. But the candle is a powerful, powerful thing in winter to these people. They'll get up in the morning and have candlelight breakfasts in the dark. And just that, the way the candle flame itself holds their attention, it's quite something.
The book is called Winter Song, A Hymn to the North. And at the same time, and I said this to you via text, and I didn't even realize what I was writing at the time, but there is something lyrical in the way that you write, and especially when you write with your own fondness for winter. Did you have a paper route, Tommy?
Yes, I did.
Delivering, I'm sure, probably the Grand Gazette or something like that. I'm just wondering if you delivered the Pioneer Press or the Dispatch that early in the morning or late, because we would be out there, as you point out in reference in Winter Song, talking about the idea that the sun's gone. The sun is gone at 4:30 in the afternoon. There's nothing more to see here, folks.
Right. Now, you could argue that that should depress somebody. But what many people told me was that the sun going down gives them permission to say it's the end of the day. And suddenly they're relaxing much earlier than they would normally, certainly much earlier than on a summer day. They talk about how there's this anxious pull on them to do something at 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 o'clock in the summer because it's still light out, and they hate it. And what they want is to be given permission to pour a drink and sit down and say, day's over, relaxing time. And that sun going down early says to them, relaxing time, and they love it. So there's all sorts of ways to look at this thing that we sometimes think causes depression. Actually, again, in Winter's Disciples, the depression with these people comes in the summer. They actually get down in the good weather. Now, this is not to say the book doesn't address the dark parts of winter and in all its different variations. I write an entire chapter called Winter's Shadow Side, and it's about the people who are done in by that season. Now, I would argue with how much the season dominates our calendar that if winter truly does you in, you have got to move, unless you can't. If you can't, for some reason, I understand. But do not live in the north if you hate winter. That's not a good idea.
Well, I have had the opportunity to be away from winter on occasion, but I don't hate winter. And I have never, no matter where I go, I will not give up my sorrels and my Voyager's coat that I have made from a Hudson Bay Trading Company blanket. So I still have that. Let me do this, Tommy. I want to take a break because I want to ask you about a couple of other things not related to Winter Song, if I can. Winter Song, A Hymn to the North. It's a really great book, and it's a great book to share with friends of yours who perhaps did move away because they couldn't deal with it or they didn't want to deal with it anymore. So we'll talk about that and some other things here coming up, including what a couple of the things you're working on now, Tommy.
Sounds great.
All right, good. It is 12:31. Chatting with T.D. Mischke. Winter Song, A Hymn to the North is a brand new book from him. And we'll be right back on News Talk 830 WCCO. Chatting with Tom Mischke. We're talking about Winter's Song, A Hymn to the North, and other things. But it is amazing to me as I look down the extended forecast, it's playing out exactly as you authored in the book, Winter's Song, Tom. And not a surprise, because it's been happening year after year. Hey, let me ask you about something else here. I, you know, see you on Facebook all the time. And you posed a question about loss. People who have maybe have lost something. Can you tell us a little bit about that, or do you want to share that, or is it too premature to be able to get into that?
No, I don't mind bringing that up, and it's something that I'm still formulating in my head, but it's related to the next podcast I put out. Before I get to that, because I would be very upset afterward if I didn't mention this, I want to be sure to tell people there is a book release party for Winter's Song. I know I won't remember it when we go on to this next subject. So I want to say October 30th, the night before Halloween, there's a book release party at the Dubliner Pub on Vandalia and Cretan in St. Paul from 6 to 10 p.m. I would love it if people listening could come down to that. Again, the Dubliner on Cretan and Vandalia, 6 to 10, October 30th. I'll be there signing books, and the book will be for sale there. Want to throw that in. And if anybody's wondering, and they're going to, they'll call after if they're not calling now, where do you get the book? I was just in Next Chapter Books on Snelling and Grand and saw it, so it's in that independent bookstore. I hope it's in all the independent bookstores out there, but I did see it at Next Chapter Booksellers on Grand and Snelling in St. Paul. Now, this other thing I'm doing, Johnny, this is for my podcast, which I've been doing for 11 years. As you know, I left CCO rather abruptly at one point in my life. I was working nights there, and I'd been in radio 22 years, and I decided it was time to just do something else before this life of mine is over. So I tried this podcasting thing, which allowed me to travel the United States interviewing people and talking to people from all walks of life, eccentrics, iconoclasts, average people who had extraordinary experiences, stuff like that. But this latest thing I'm working on, I'm playing with the idea of what we lose in life, things we have lost, and all the different ways that manifests itself. And I put out a question on Facebook saying to people, when I say lost and you think about your life, what comes to mind? And it was utterly fascinating, the responses I got. Everything from feeling lost, personally feeling lost, to the most precious thing to you that had been lost, some item, a ring your grandfather had given you, something that your mother's wedding ring, something that was really important, your dad's baseball mitt, something got lost and it meant the world to you, or in the most terrible cases, a spouse dies and a person just feels utterly lost, just lost, having no idea who they are anymore without being in relation to this person, how they face life, what life is now without them. And I just began to explore this idea because what I realized was when we come into this world, we don't have anything. So there is nothing to lose outside of our own life, which when we've lost that, we're not even going to be aware that we've lost it. There is nothing to lose. So it's also a story about what we acquire and the meaning we give to what we acquire, the meaning that that a person has, a brother, a sister, a mother, a spouse, the meaning things have. So that when we lose them, after giving them all that meaning, it's such a powerful thing to lose, and it's in proportion to the meaning we give these things. And I've been playing with this idea this month. The show doesn't come out until November 1st. My podcast just come out monthly, and you can find them at MischkeRoadshow.com. But at this point in the month, I'm not 100% sure what the show is going to sound like yet. I'm talking to people. I'm interviewing people. I'm playing with this idea. And you won't believe where the idea came from. I was driving down Hennepin Avenue, and I said, Hennepin, Louis Hennepin, explorer, priest, Franciscan, what's his story? And I went on to learn that he was actually born Anthony, not Louis. And then I understood why it was St. Anthony Falls. He gave St. Anthony Falls that name. And then I thought about St. Anthony of Padua, the patron saint of what? Lost things.
Lost things, sure.
Yeah, that's how I headed down that road. So that's where this is all coming from.
Well, I'll look forward to hearing that podcast, but let me remind everybody again, a week from Monday, on the 30th, at the Dubliner. Why am I surprised it's happening at the Dubliner? But anyway, Tommy Mischke, I'm assuming you're going to be signing books at this release party, right? For people who step up and would like to get a copy of Winter Song?
Absolutely. Yeah, the Dubliner just happens to be my favorite Irish pub, and I will argue that there are a few authentic Irish pubs left in this town that really, really have the feel of what you would find in Ireland. And so I love this joint in St. Paul, and I'm going to have it there because we can have a little music, and there's some fun to be had, and it's just a relaxing environment. I really hope people will show up there, and even if you don't want to get the book, just come and say hi.
What time does it start? What time do you start this again?
I'll be there at 6 p.m. and sticking around till 10.
Well, wonderful. Hey, Tommy, I look forward to having a chance to chat. I know that while you are working on your podcast, you take some time and you travel from here to there. I hope that you will keep in touch with me, and when you travel my way, we will make a point of getting together. I would be happy to host you as you continue your travels on down the road.
Johnny, not only will I show up at your place just for a chance to give you a big hug and BS with you, just the fact that you're offering me a free bed, golly, I'm there, brother.
Okay, well, you got it. I said it, so you got it. Hey, again, Winter Song, A Hymn to the North. You can find it at independent bookstores all over the place. I got mine online, and I just because it was just the easiest way for me to get to it. But the Dubliner, a week from Monday, on the 30th, from 6 until 10, Tommy Mischke will be down there, and with his good friend, Mr. Jameson, I'm sure will be standing not too far away, right?
Yeah, that's right. He'll even be signing books.
There you go. Hey, take care, Tommy. Thank you for joining me this afternoon here as I get this chance to fill in for Shaletta. You have a great weekend, and good luck with the book. Keep in touch. You better, or I will hunt you down.
Thank you, Johnny. I appreciate it. I hope to talk to you again soon. You be well.
All right, take care. It is 12:42 this time out. Something else is, it's kind of funny how a couple of things just kind of connect here. Chatting with a former classmate of mine who has got an important announcement coming up here. And we'll share that with you next here on News Talk 830 WCCO. There is an event coming up next weekend, as a matter of fact. Not this weekend, next weekend, October 28th. It runs for about 6 hours in the afternoon, or the morning through the afternoon, at the Bloomington Armory. It's called FallCon 23, and it's put together by the Minnesota Comic Book Association, and somebody who's very well connected to the Minnesota Comic Book Association is an old classmate of mine and somebody who's been a part of the comic book scene. Joel Thingvall joins me. He's also a well-known Twin Cities actor. You've seen him many places. If we were on television right now, you'd say, oh, I recognize that guy. I don't know from where, but I've seen him before. Joel, how the heck are you? Tell me about comic books and your longtime connection to them.
Well, John, when we grew up in the 50s and 60s, comic books were all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, when almost every kid in grade school during our time probably read comic books. But then, you know, we graduated to junior high and maybe 50-60% of the people moved on to other things. You know, and then by the time went to high school and girls and cars and that. There was maybe a half dozen that still remained, and I was one of those half dozen.
Well, to the point where you were quite a collector yourself, but you were also proprietor of one of the Twin Cities' best comic book shops at one time.
Well, it, you know, comic book fandom all started right around 1972. It was an offshoot of science fiction fandom, which started in 68 at the University of Minnesota when a group started putting on what became Minicon and Convergence. And comic fans started to show up in too many numbers, and somehow the two groups didn't mix, so we had to break off. And in 72, a fellow named David Murris put out a call and to start what was called the Minnesota Comics and Fantasy Association, and had monthly backyard meetings, which had 20, 25 people, then 30, then 50, then 75. And it was like, this was too many for my backyard, and decided to rent a sheet metal workers union hall. And the first comic book convention happened in November 1973. And from that grew the first comic book only store, which was Comic City, in 1974, which was on the corner of 31st and Hennepin.
I remember it very well, yeah.
45 years until everything on that corner was sold and turned into apartment buildings and that. And it still exists. Comic City had an interesting history. I was its first employee in 74, worked there until 79, came in as an owner in the early 80s, and then we eventually sold it to a fellow who unfortunately didn't pay his bills, got evicted. But two of the former owners lived in the house and back. The store was originally a mom-and-pop grocery store that had an insurance office next door and a three-bedroom house. But then they moved in and established a new name for a store, which was Comic Book College, or the College of Comic Book Knowledge, which is still in existence, now in a warehouse area out in Roseville.
All right, now let me get
half of 30 years working in that store.
I want to get specific about now what's coming up at FallCon 23 next weekend at the Bloomington Armory. If you go to mncba.org, you can find a link and get more information there. It's also a Facebook page, but tell me, is this a chance now for people to show up and swap comic books, buy comic books, meet some of the comic book creators?
Yes, it's a chance just to get together with people. It's on a smaller scale. This is kind of like the third
chatting with Tom Mischke. We're talking about Winter's Song, A Hymn to the North, and other things. But it is amazing to me as I look down the extended forecast. It's playing out exactly as you authored in the book, Winter's Song, Tom. And not a surprise, because it's been happening year after year. Hey, let me ask you about something else here. I, you know, see you on Facebook all the time. And you posed a question about loss. People who have maybe have lost something. Can you tell us a little bit about that, or do you want to share that, or is it too premature to be able to get into that?
No, I don't mind bringing that up, and it's something that I'm still formulating in my head, but it's related to the next podcast I put out. Before I get to that, because I would be very upset afterward if I didn't mention this, I want to be sure to tell people there is a book release party for Winter's Song. I know I won't remember it when we go on to this next subject. So I want to say October 30th, the night before Halloween, there's a book release party at the Dubliner Pub on Vandalia and Creighton in St. Paul from 6 to 10 p.m. I would love it if people listening could come down to that. Again, the Dubliner on Creighton and Vandalia, 6 to 10, October 30th. I'll be there signing books, and the book will be for sale there. Want to throw that in. And if anybody's wondering, and they're going to, they'll call after if they're not calling now, where do you get the book? I was just in Next Chapter Books on Snelling and Grand and saw it, so it's in that independent bookstore. I hope it's in all the independent bookstores out there, but I did see it at Next Chapter Booksellers on Grand and Snelling in St. Paul. Now, this other thing I'm doing, Johnny, this is for my podcast, which I've been doing for 11 years. As you know, I left CCO rather abruptly at one point in my life. I was working nights there, and I'd been in radio 22 years, and I decided it was time to just do something else before this life of mine is over. So I tried this podcasting thing, which allowed me to travel the United States interviewing people and talking to people from all walks of life, eccentrics, iconoclasts, average people who had extraordinary experiences, stuff like that. But this latest thing I'm working on, I'm playing with the idea of what we lose in life, things we have lost, and all the different ways that manifests itself. And I put out a question on Facebook saying to people, when I say lost and you think about your life, what comes to mind? And it was utterly fascinating, the responses I got. Everything from feeling lost, personally feeling lost, to the most precious thing to you that had been lost, some item, a ring your grandfather had given you, something that your mother's wedding ring, something that was really important, your dad's baseball mitt, something got lost and it meant the world to you, or in the most terrible cases, a spouse dies and a person just feels utterly lost, just lost, having no idea who they are anymore without being in relation to this person, how they face life, what life is now without them. And I just began to explore this idea because what I realized was when we come into this world, we don't have anything. So there is nothing to lose outside of our own life, which when we've lost that, we're not even going to be aware that we've lost it. There is nothing to lose. So it's also a story about what we acquire and the meaning we give to what we acquire, the meaning that that a person has, a brother, a sister, a mother, a spouse, the meaning things have. So that when we lose them, after giving them all that meaning, it's such a powerful thing to lose, and it's in proportion to the meaning we give these things. And I've been playing with this idea this month. The show doesn't come out until November 1st. My podcasts just come out monthly, and you can find them at MischkeRoadshow.com. But at this point in the month, I'm not 100% sure what the show is going to sound like yet. I'm talking to people, I'm interviewing people, I'm playing with this idea. And you won't believe where the idea came from. I was driving down Hennepin Avenue, and I said, Hennepin, Louis Hennepin, explorer, priest, Franciscan, what's his story? And I went on to learn that he was actually born Anthony, not Louis. And then I understood why it was St. Anthony Falls. He gave St. Anthony Falls that name. And then I thought about St. Anthony of Padua, the patron saint of what? Lost things.
Lost things, sure.
Yeah, that's how I headed down that road. So that's where this is all coming from.
Well, I'll look forward to hearing that podcast, but let me remind everybody again, a week from Monday, on the 30th, at the Dubliner. Why am I surprised it's happening at the Dubliner? But anyway, Tommy Mischke, I'm assuming you're going to be signing books at this release party, right? For people who step up and would like to get a copy of Winter's Song?
Absolutely. Yeah, the Dubliner just happens to be my favorite Irish pub, and I will argue that there are a few authentic Irish pubs left in this town that really, really have the feel of what you would find in Ireland. And so I love this joint in St. Paul, and I'm going to have it there because we can have a little music, and there's some fun to be had, and it's just a relaxing environment. I really hope people will show up there, and even if you don't want to get the book, just come and say hi.
What time does it start? What time do you start this again?
I'll be there at 6 p.m. and sticking around till 10.
Well, wonderful. Hey, Tommy, I look forward to having a chance to chat. I know that while you are working on your podcast, you take some time and you travel from here to there. I hope that you will keep in touch with me, and when you travel my way, we will make a point of getting together. I would be happy to host you as you continue your travels on down the road.
Johnny, not only will I show up at your place just for a chance to give you a big hug and BS with you, just the fact that you're offering me a free bed, golly, I'm there, brother.
Okay, well, you got it. Said it, so you got it. Hey, again, Winter Song, A Hymn to the North. You can find it at independent bookstores all over the place. I got mine online, and I just because it was just the easiest way for me to get to it. But the Dubliner, a week from Monday, on the 30th, from 6 until 10, Tommy Mischke will be down there and with his good friend, Mr. Jameson. I'm sure he'll be standing not too far away, right?
Yeah, that's right. He'll even be signing books.
There you go. Hey, take care, Tommy. Thank you for joining me this afternoon here as I get this chance to fill in for Shaletta. You have a great weekend, and good luck with the book. Keep in touch. You better, or I will hunt you down.
Thank you, Johnny. I appreciate it. I hope to talk to you again soon. You be well.
All right, take care. It is 12:42, this time out. Something else, it's kind of funny how a couple of things just kind of connect here. Chatting with a former classmate of mine who has got an important announcement coming up here. And we'll share that with you next here on News Talk 830 WCCO. There is an event coming up next weekend, as a matter of fact. Not this weekend, next weekend, October 28th. It runs for about 6 hours in the afternoon or the morning through the afternoon at the Bloomington Armory. It's called FallCon 23, and it's put together by the Minnesota Comic Book Association and somebody who's very well connected to the Minnesota Comic Book Association is an old classmate of mine and somebody who's been a part of the comic book scene. Joel Thingvall joins me. He's also a well-known Twin Cities actor. You've seen him many places. If we were on television right now, you'd say, I recognize that guy. I don't know from where, but I've seen him before. Joel, how the heck are you? Tell me about comic books and your longtime connection to them.
Well, John, when we grew up in the 50s and 60s, comic books were all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, when almost every kid in grade school during our time probably read comic books. But then, you know, we graduated to junior high and maybe 50-60% of the people moved on to other things. You know, and then by the time went to high school and girls and cars and that, there was maybe a half dozen that still remained, and I was one of those half dozen.
Well, to the point where you were quite a collector yourself, but you are also proprietor of one of the Twin Cities' best comic book shops at one time.
Well, comic book fandom all started right around 1972. It was an offshoot of science fiction fandom, which started in 68 at the University of Minnesota when a group started putting on what became Minicon and Convergence. And comic fans started to show up in too many numbers, and somehow the two groups didn't mix, so we had to break off. And in 72, a fellow named David Murris put out a call to start what was called the Minnesota Comics and Fantasy Association and had monthly backyard meetings, which had 20, 25 people, then 30, then 50, then 75. And it was like, this was too many for my backyard, and decided to rent a sheet metal workers union hall. And the first comic book convention happened in November 1973. And from that grew the first comic book-only store, which was Comic City, in 1974, which was on the corner of 31st and Hennepin.
I remember it very well,
45 years, until everything on that corner was sold and turned into apartment buildings and that. And it still exists. Comic City had an interesting history. I was its first employee in 74, worked there until 79, came in as an owner in the early 80s, and then we eventually sold it to a fellow who unfortunately didn't pay his bills, got evicted, but two of the former owners lived in the house and back. The store was originally a mom-and-pop grocery store that had an insurance office next door and a three-bedroom house, but then they moved in and established a new name for a store, which was Comic Book College, or the College of Comic Book Knowledge, which is still in existence now in a warehouse area out in Roseville.
All right, now let me get
probably half of my half of 30 years working in that store.
I want to get specific about now what's coming up at FallCon 23 next weekend at the Bloomington Armory. If you go to mncba.org, you can find a link and get more information there. It's also a Facebook page. But tell me, is this a chance now for people to show up and swap comic books, buy comic books, meet some of the comic book creators?
Yes, it's a chance just to get together with people. It's on a smaller scale. This is kind of like the third reincarnation that has now happened of the local fan-friendly comic book convention. Again, you know, that sprung out of the backyard meetings. Dave and I did comic book conventions for 10 years, up through 83. They kind of continued and lingered on, and kind of started to go kaput. And then another group of fans got together at Annie's Parlor in 1988 and said, hey, we can put on a comic book convention. And that group lasted for 35 years, culminating in big shows happening at the state fairgrounds. But then COVID came in and kind of shut everything down. And the remnants of that group have kind of faded off into the past. And now we have a new group that have come together of about 20, 25 people who are keeping the convention fever alive in a fan-friendly atmosphere. And the good news is that's going to return to the fairgrounds next fall.
Oh, good. Now, let me ask you a couple of questions about your own connection to comic books here. Do you still have a comic book collection, or did you have to kind of like, because you saw every comic book that was there as a proprietor of Comic City back in the day, did you have to sort of okay, that's enough. I can't keep buying these comic books. I can't keep eating the baked goods in the bakery here. Did you have to divest of some of these comic books?
Yes, over time, you know, I've touched probably pretty much every comic book that has ever been published. And, well, I'm not driving a Mercedes or a Cadillac, sadly. but no, over, you know, I collected them, and that they were worth money was at some point, and some of them are going for outrageous sums now. But it was enjoying them. It was enjoying the people that I met through the course of, you know, my 50 years in the hobby, traveling around to different conventions. You know, that was the joy.
Well, you've turned it into something great. And what kind of ages do you see now when you look at, like, FallCon 23 at the Bloomington Armory on the 28th from 10 until 4? What kind of ages gather around comic books these days, Joel?
Well, it is going to be interesting. I'm doing a panel at 11 o'clock, and I'm still expecting that there's probably going to be a few customers from those 74, 75, 76 days that are still around. You have to remember that comic books didn't start until about 39, 40, you know, and the first generation of comic book people, well, I'm from the second generation that started in the late 60s, early 70s, and there were very few people that were collectors over the age of 40 at that time. You know, now we have probably a few more that are in my age range that are 60 in the 50s, but there are also kids that have come in because of the movies and that, but there's also a new direction that comics have gone, which is, you know, the graphic novels, and I see it with my grandkids, the Captain Underpants, you know, the Diarrhea,
sure, yeah.
Kid, Last Kids on Earth, you know, which are, you know, solid 200-page adventures all done in the sequential art, the panel, the word balloon format. You know, so we have all ages. We have a massive group of people that come dressed up cosplaying, and also you can meet a Superman of all different sizes walking, you know, in the aisles between dealers selling toys and comics and cards. It is something that has become a way of expression now for a wide variety of people. Comics are not just superheroes. You know?
No, no. And I think that's what many of us think. We think Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, those superheroes, but there is so much more to it than that today. And as you point out, some of these graphic novels that are still considered comics because of the balloon speak and the frames that goes that go by.
Yes. You know, we forget that comics have always been there in the newspaper. You know, the Sunday newspaper.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Strips. You know, we all just loved them as a kid, taking our Sully putty and laying them on and transferring the images. And we also forget, you know, that comics are editorial cartoons. Comics are animation, cartooning. You know, it covers a wide variety of art forms, and it reaches a massive audience of people above and beyond Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, the Incredible Hulk, you know.
Well, I think many people, will show up at FallCon at the Bloomington Armory. Again, if you go to mncba.org, you can get more information about this. But I think many people will show up, Joel, and probably plan to spend the bulk of their day and afternoon there. And I appreciate your jumping on the air with me here just to share a little bit of an insight into all of this as we get this chance. And look forward. Now, your session, just briefly here, in the 30 seconds I've got left, Joel, your session will feature what again coming up from like 11 to 11:45?
I'm going to talk about the history of Comic-Cons, you know, from 1973 to the present. I'm joined by Paul Ewart, who was one of the guys at the Annie Parlors group that started in 1988. And I don't know how we're going to cover everything in 45 minutes, but we're going to try and do it. Superman faster than a speeding bullet. And
okay.
John, when it comes to comics, we are all just kids at heart.
Well, there you go. Again, Joel Thingvall talking about Minnesota Comic Book Association FallCon 23 on the 28th from 10 o'clock until 4. And Joel's session will go from 11 to 11:45. Have a great time. I'll look forward to hearing more about it, Joel. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, John.
We'll be right back. News Talk 830 WCCO. There is an event coming up next weekend, as a matter of fact. Not this weekend, next weekend, October 28th. It runs for about 6 hours in the afternoon or the morning to the, through the afternoon at the Bloomington Armory. It's called FallCon 23, and it's put together by the Minnesota Comic Book Association, and somebody who's very well connected to the Minnesota Comic Book Association is an old classmate of mine and somebody who's been a part of the comic book scene. Joel Thingvall joins me. He's also a well-known Twin Cities actor. You've seen him many places. If we were on television right now, you'd say, oh, I recognize that guy. I don't know from where, but I've seen him before. Joel, how the heck are you? Tell me about comic books and your longtime connection to them.
Well, John, when we grew up in the 50s and 60s, comic books were all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, when almost every kid in grade school during our time probably read comic books. But then, you know, we graduated to junior high and maybe 50-60% of the people moved on to other things. You know, and then by the time went to high school and girls and cars and that, there was maybe a half dozen that still remained, and I was one of those half dozen.
Well, to the point where you were quite a collector yourself, but you were also proprietor of one of the Twin Cities' best comic book shops at one time.
Well, it, you know, comic book fandom all started right around 1972. It was an offshoot of science fiction fandom, which started in 68 at the University of Minnesota when a group started putting on what became Minicon and Convergence. And comic fans started to show up in too many numbers, and somehow the two groups didn't mix, so we had to break off. And in 72, a fellow named David Murs put out a call and to start what was called the Minnesota Comics and Fantasy Association, and had monthly backyard meetings, which had 20, 25 people, then 30, then 50, then 75. And it was like, this was too many for my backyard, and decided to rent a sheet metal workers union hall. And the first comic book convention happened in November 1973. And from that grew the first comic book only store, which was Comic City, in 1974, which was on the corner of 31st and Hennepin.
I remember it very well, yeah.
45 years until everything on that corner was sold and turned into apartment buildings and that. And it still exists. Comic City had an interesting history. I was its first employee in 74, worked there until 79, came in as an owner in the early 80s, and then we eventually sold it to a fellow who unfortunately didn't pay his bills, got evicted, but two of the former owners lived in the house and back. The store was originally a mom-and-pop grocery store that had an insurance office next door and a three-bedroom house, but then they moved in and established a new name for a store, which was Comic Book College, or the College of Comic Book Knowledge, which is still in existence now in a warehouse area out in Roseville.
All right, now let me get...
half of 30 years working in that store.
I want to get specific about now what's coming up at FallCon 23 next weekend at the Bloomington Armory. If you go to mncba.org, you can find a link and get more information there. It's also a Facebook page, but tell me, is this a chance now for people to show up and swap comic books, buy comic books, meet some of the comic book creators?
Yes, it's a chance just to get together with people. It's on a smaller scale. This is kind of like the third reincarnation that has now happened of the local fan-friendly comic book convention. Again, you know, that sprung out of the backyard meetings. Dave and I did comic book conventions for 10 years, up through 83. They kind of continued and lingered on, and then kind of started to go kaput. And then another group of fans got together at Annie's Parlor in 1988 and said, hey, we can put on a comic book convention. And that group lasted for 35 years, culminating in big shows happening at the state fairgrounds. But then COVID came in and kind of shut everything down. And the remnants of that group have kind of faded off into the past. And now we have a new group that have come together of about 20, 25 people who are keeping the convention fever alive in a fan-friendly atmosphere. And the good news is that going to return to the fairgrounds next fall.
Oh, good. Now, let me ask you a couple of questions about your own connection to comic books here. Do you still have a comic book collection, or did you have to kind of like, because you saw every comic book that was there as a proprietor of Comic City back in the day, did you have to sort of okay, that's enough. I can't keep buying these comic books. I can't keep eating the baked goods in the bakery here. Did you have to divest of some of these comic books?
Yes, over time, you know, I've touched probably pretty much every comic book that has ever been published. And, well, I'm not driving a Mercedes or a Cadillac, sadly. but no, over, you know, I collected them, and that they were worth money was at some point, and some of them are going for outrageous sums now. But it was enjoying them. It was enjoying the people that I met through the course of, you know, my 50 years in the hobby, traveling around to different conventions. You know, that was the joy.
Well, you've turned it into something great. And what kind of ages do you see now when you look at, like, FallCon 23 at the Bloomington Armory on the 28th from 10 until 4? What kind of ages gather around comic books these days, Joel?
Well, it is going to be interesting. I'm doing a panel at 11 o'clock, and I'm still expecting that there's probably going to be a few customers from those 74, 75, 76 days that are still around. You have to remember that comic books didn't start until about 39, 40. You know, and the first generation of comic book people, well, I'm from the second generation that started in the late 60s, early 70s, and there were very few people that were collectors over the age of 40 at that time. You know, now we have probably a few more that are in my age range that are 60 in the 50s, but there are also kids that have come in because of the movies and that, but there's also a new direction that comics have gone, which is, you know, the graphic novels, and I see it with my grandkids, the Captain Underpants, you know, the Diary Kid, Last Kids on Earth, you know, which are, you know, solid 200-page adventures, all done in the sequential art, the panel, the word balloon format, you know. So we have all ages. We have a massive group of people that come dressed up cosplaying, and also you can meet a Superman of all different sizes walking, you know, in the aisles between the dealers selling toys and comics and cards. It is something that has become a way of expression now for a wide variety of people. Comics are not just superheroes. You know?
No. And I think that's what many of us think. We think Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, those superheroes, but there is so much more to it than that today. And as you point out, some of these graphic novels that are still considered comics because of the balloon speak and the frames that go by.
Yes. You know, we forget that comics have always been there in the newspaper. You know, the Sunday newspaper
strips.
You know, we all just loved them as a kid, taking our Sully Putty and laying them on and transferring the images. And we also forget, you know, that comics are editorial cartoons. Comics are animation, cartooning. You know, it covers a wide variety of art forms, and it reaches a massive audience of people above and beyond Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, the Incredible Hulk, you know.
Well, I think many people will show up at Fall Con at the Bloomington Armory. Again, if you go to mncba.org, you can get more information about this. But I think many people will show up, Joel, and probably plan to spend the bulk of their day and afternoon there. And I appreciate your jumping on the air with me here just to share a little bit of an insight into all of this as we get this chance. And look forward. Now, your session, just briefly here, in the 30 seconds I've got left, Joel, your session will feature what again coming up from like 11 to 11:45?
I'm going to talk about the history of Comic-Cons, you know, from 1973 to the present. I'm joined by Paul Ewart, who was one of the guys at the Annie Parlors group that started in 1988. And I don't know how we're going to cover everything in 45 minutes, but we're going to try and do it. Superman faster than a speeding bullet. And
okay.
John, when it comes to comics, we are all just kids at heart.
Well, there you go. Again, Joel Thingvall talking about Minnesota Comic Book Association Fall Con 23 on the 28th from 10 o'clock until 4. And Joel's session will go from 11 to 11:45. Have a great time. I'll look forward to hearing more about it, Joel. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, John.
We'll be right back. News Talk 830 WCCO.